Well, welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for taking time to come to tonight's teleclass called Self-Care and Nature Awareness. And I'm really thrilled that we have Davidson here to join us. And hi, Scott.
Hey, Anastasia. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming tonight.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure.
I'm going to do a little introduction, and then I'll pass the mic to you, so to speak.
Okay.
And I'm just going to I'll just say a little bit about myself. My name is Anastasia Basil, and I'm a certified nutrition consultant, and I'm a cranial sacral and acupressure therapist. I have a practice in Chico and also in the Bay Area, and I work by phone, so I have clients around the country. And I help people make a deeper connection with their bodies, and I also talk to a lot of people about food, and I realize that eating is a big way that we interact with nature. And I certainly can see that when we eat foods that are closer to how they came from nature and are less processed, that, you know, people really make huge strides to become healthier. So tonight we're going to talk about nature awareness in more depth. And I realized that I had a kind of a lucky childhood in the sense that I got to play outdoors for hours unsupervised, which I think is kind of rare now. And I think that always that helped me always find solace in nature. And, you know, I bought this house where I live now in Forest Ranch about 8 years ago. And when I bought it, I wanted to really take care of this place with respect for the natural ecology. And I took a permaculture design certification class. And permaculture is about designing where you live in accordance with how nature designs things. And I signed up for a naturalist correspondence course called Kamana. And then a few years ago, I did a series of tracking classes with John Broussard and Scott Davidson. And it just really made my time spent outside so much richer. I found that after taking that class, when I went outside, I could just see so much more of where the animals had been and what animals had been where and what they were eating and what the birds were doing. And it has been just a really wonderful unfolding experience for me. So I'm really, really thrilled that Scott is here tonight to talk about nature awareness. So, Scott, would you like to introduce yourself a little?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Anastasia. Yeah, and thanks again for the invite. This is great. I love this conversation a lot. So my name is Scott Davidson, and I consider myself a guide and a mentor in nature connection. And, you know, I grew up in the suburbs of the San Francisco Bay Area down in Redwood City along the edge of the bay there, and have really traveled quite a lot around different parts of the world, but have really only made home up and down the coast here. I lived in San Francisco for a long time and down in Santa Cruz for a while. And now I live in Lagunitas, which is in Marin County, just north of San Francisco in the coastal hills here. And my training is you know, manyfold. I have my degree is in plant ecology from UC Santa Cruz, which is a lot of fun for me. And shortly after I graduated there, I connected with John Young, who is a holistic tracker and real, you know, really an expert internationally in deep nature connection and in mentoring that process of really connecting to the land and connecting to community and to connecting to oneself in the process. So John Young has been a really important mentor for me over the years, both professionally and personally. And he also helped start something called the Art of Mentoring, which I've been involved with for years. And I also have some permaculture training. I have a design certificate there. And really, for anyone on the call that's interested or curious about permaculture, you know, many people think about it as a kind of gardening design course, but really it's a course designed to help us see patterns in nature and see the cycles and learn to replicate some of those same patterns to help guide our own design work, whether it's designing a garden or designing the building of a home or a home business, you know, or cultivating community in our neighborhoods. So it's a very rich, very, very rich and holistic lineage permaculture is. And the first principle of permaculture of any design work is observation. And I think Anasuya and I both probably have some stories to tell about our relationship with observation now after practicing something like tracking and permaculture for a while. So really my credentials are both in, you know, the academic world through Plant Ecology Department of UC Santa Cruz, as well as with an international professional certification for wildlife trackers. And certainly John Young is a good friend and mentor.
Well, cool. I'm so happy to have your experience here with us on the call tonight.
Yeah, thanks. And just could I actually, you know, take the mic and set up a round of Thanksgiving, Anasuya?
Yes, please do.
Great. So there's more about programs that I offer locally at the end of the call. But right now, I would really love to actually start the conversation after this brief introduction. Really start the conversation with a round of Thanksgiving. This is, you know, I really consider this work, this conversation in particular, sacred work, because it's the kind of conversation that really helps connect us in a very deep and powerful way, you know. And this is just a short call, but there's something very simple and true about offering some really good words of Thanksgiving before launching into a conversation like this, you know. So I just want to start for myself right now, and then we'll open it up for other folks who might want to share some words of thanks in a moment. But I know for me right now, I'm standing on my deck in Lagunitas, California, and it's such a beautiful day, you know, and I'm really feeling thankful, especially right now for the birds that are settling into the branches of these trees and making nests, you know. It's a really special time of year. And I know you know that, you know, springtime, and we've got these really gentle spring rains that are still rolling through. And I've been paying a lot of attention to the bird life in my neighborhood recently, and I'm just feeling a lot of gratitude in my heart right now for some of the lives that I've witnessed in my own backyard here. Of birds singing for the first time in months, you know, birds nesting and settling in, and it's just, I feel so so blessed to have an opportunity to, you know, to pay special attention in this time of year to all the bird life that is really, you know, buzzing and thriving and singing and chattering away around my little house here. So I just want to send out a special gratitude for the bird life and how they help sort of lift me out of my busy mind and help me engage more fully in the landscape. So I'd love to invite you, Anasuya, to share just a bit about where you are right now, and just a few words of thanks, and we can open it up for anyone else that might want to share.
All right. Well, I am looking out towards a beautiful blossoming cherry tree, and it's just white, fluffy, snowball-like blossoms that are gorgeous. And I'm also grateful for the orange-crowned warbler, because yesterday I was talking to a friend and saying, what is that bird call? I hear it over and over again. And what is the bird that's making it? And I tracked it yesterday, and I had a moment when I was tracking it, trying to follow the sound, and I thought to myself, I'm never going to find that little bird in those big trees. But I did. And it was beautiful. It was like a little olive green bird, and it threw its head back and opened its beak and made that shwee, 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 shwee kind of sound. And it was beautiful. And I was able to look it up in the book and identify it and hear the recording of the bird sound and identify it. So grateful to the orange crown warbler and the cherry blossom.
Right on. Beautiful. Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. And the mics are open. You know, who else would like to just take a moment to share a word of thanks? Anybody can chime in.
Well, this is Suzanne, and I am beyond grateful to be able to be looking out my window and off my deck at the ridge, the volcanic ridge that I live off of. So I can see down in the valley of the Butte Valley, as well as towards the hills and see the mountains on the snow, and hear the really very strong water of the rushing of Little Chico Creek, which is down below me. So that's, I'm very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Beautiful. Who else would like to share some words?
This is Dulcie, and I'm fortunate enough to live in the same beautiful area as Suzanne and Anasuya. So I won't go into that in any more detail, except that we're awfully fortunate. And but I did see my first black-headed grosbeak yesterday, which is always an exciting time for me because they raise their families here, and I get to watch them grow. So I'm off on a new year of having families.
Right on. Yeah, cheers to that. Beautiful. Thank you. Who else would like to share some words of thanks before we launch into this conversation any further? Who else?
This is Meredith, and I live in a very urban area, but I enjoy the wildflowers making their way out even on the side of the highway, and also the hawks that are hunting from light posts above the freeway.
Mm. Nice. Thanks, Meredith. Good words. Who else would like to share? Okay, that's great. It's a really, really beautiful and simple round of Thanksgiving, and I just want to wrap this bundle of thanks by, just taking a moment here. We don't have time, of course, to name everything. You know, if we listed all the things that support life, we would be on this call for a very, very, very long time. And but there's a lot out there. There are a lot of people that are supporting me to do my work here, where I live, and family and friends. And there's a lot of just incredible elements from, you know, this gentle rain that's going to come through this week, coming from the west, and to the full moon that's just beginning to wane a bit. The incredible, just thriving life of microorganisms in the soil that help grow our food. You know, there's so much seen and unseen that supports our lives, and I just want to offer some really, really simple thanks for all those elements that really support us in being here right now, and just send a big blanket of gratitude in all directions. And just say thank you. So with that, I'll say that our minds are and hearts are one, and feels really, really good and simple to start this conversation in this way. So thanks for chiming in and participating. And we'd love to pass it back to you, Anasuya. Thanks.
Well, cool. That was very sweet. Thank you. Well, you know, mm-hmm. One question that I would love to start off with is, you know, I know that, I guess I understand that spending time in nature, a lot of people recognize that there's value in getting fresh air and exercising, you know, when you go out to walk your dog or, you know, or go bird watching. But I was just wondering, what is the difference between, a deeper nature connection and, you know, going for a hike or walking your dog?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's, you know, we live in a time, that many of us do at least, you know, where, you know, around the world there's lots to do. You know, there's a lot of things to do aside from taking a walk in the park. You know, we have fairly ambitious lives and we're trying to get a lot done. And you know, how important is being in nature anyway, really, you know, but in terms of personal development or our own well-being? And I want to say, you know, right off the, you know, walking the dog and going and watching birds is really a great, there's a tremendous value there. You know, it's a really, really great start. And for some of us who are walking our dogs every day, you know, that is considered really quality time. You know, it's we're walking the trails and out there for an hour or so and really getting some good exercise, and it's time well spent. And I certainly don't want to argue with that by any means, you know, but to speak to your question, honestly, about what the difference is, gosh, you know, there's a kind of passive connection that happens just by itself when we spend any kind of time outside, you know, by just, you know, going for a walk around the block at the end of the day to kind of, you know, restore peace within ourselves or walking the dog. You know, we're out there and we're stimulated. You know, there are birds that that our ears are hearing, you know, whether we're listening to them carefully or not, you know, and there's fresh air that we're breathing anyways, you know. And it's also worth distinguishing that there is something profoundly different, I think, about going outside with the intention of deep listening and with the intention of engaging our curiosity from what we're taking in from the landscape. You know, what is that bird that makes that sound in the trees that just came through? I haven't heard that sound before, or well, I haven't heard that sound in a while. Like, who is that bird? I want to go find out. You know, and there's something profound about the intention of going outside with the simple intention of cultivating a deeper relationship with the life in our neighborhood. That is distinctly different from, you know, just going out to walk the dog. And, you know, the potential for really having, you know, a formative relationship, a profound and formative relationship with nature, with quality time spent outside solely for connection's sake, the potential there is gigantic, you know, and this is really this is where we're coming from evolutionarily, historically. We're all coming from a very close connection to the earth. We're coming from, you know, picking up on the subtleties of the change in weather, or you know, the activities of insects, or, you know, sort of exactly where those birds are nesting in each of the trees in our own neighborhood. You know, we're coming from this place, and you know, life has changed a lot in the last generation or 10 generations. So the extent that many of us don't really notice those things anymore, you know, and there's a deep loss of nourishment that comes with that. So I'm really interested in the conversation about how to really cultivate deep, intimate relationship with the nature of our place, and how to do that in a very intentional, very fast track kind of way. You know, we can all move to the country, and that sure helps. But we can do this work in the city as well. There's incredible life that comes through the cities of all corners of the world. You know, the black-headed grosbeak is migrating through the city as well, and there's more Cooper's hawks in San Francisco than there are in you know, many country towns. So yeah, it's really a question of deep nourishment and really like deeply connecting and building deep relationship and belonging to a place.
Well, that sounds really cool. What would you say? Like, you talk about there's a deep nourishment by spending intentional time with nature. Like, how do we benefit mentally, physically, spiritually from having that kind of deep connection?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a huge question, you know, and we could talk about this for days, but to nutshell it, you know, in my own experience, and if you're not familiar with this particular question or this, you know, this topic, I encourage you all to look up, you know, Richard Louv's work, Lost Child in the Woods, and what's the title of his most recent book, Anasuya?
The Nature Principle. That's the one where he talks about spending time in nature as vitamin N, like it's an nutrient.
Nice. So Richard Louv is really spearheaded, you know, very you know, thorough research on trying to get at some of the real particular details on, you know, that answer this question. But you know, I just want to speak from my own experience in terms of, you know, what that nourishment actually looks like or feels like. And you know, I can say right off the bat that I'm sure that everyone on this call, we all know what it feels like to be really relaxed in our bodies and to really feel a deep sense of peace. And it's all relative, you know, so we all have our own sort of relative experience of that in our lives from one day to the next. But there's something very, but that's really the first one that comes to mind, is this deep sense of peace and belonging. I think really only comes from spending quality time in nature, and oftentimes it comes with having mentorship and how to engage fully in that way. But some of the other attributes that come to mind are things like, you know, just having the ability to quiet our minds in an instant, you know, being able to actually choose that within a second or two, to completely quiet our mind and engage our body. You know, another one might be, you know, really experiencing the happiness of a child, you know, the joy and the humor and the playfulness of a child, you know, the vitality and the sort of the electric energy that comes and when we really need to do our work quickly. You know, sometimes it helps to have a real strong spring in our step and to just electrically go into whatever the task is at hand and do it really efficiently and quickly and joyfully. You know, being able to actually make powerful commitments in our lives is a byproduct of spending time in nature. You know, having a deep capacity to empathize and love the people in our lives and to have a real powerful, you know, passion and purpose in our lives as well. All these things are you know, specific indicators that our nature connection is working, and nature connection is you know, a tried and true way to actually cultivate these qualities in our lives. You know, so just beginning with curiosity as an example, you know, all children are, you know, are when they're playing outside and when they're, you know, playing in school and with their families, they're curious. Just naturally, we're curious beings, and some of us, you know, manage to maintain that into our adult lives, and some of us kind of lose it a little bit along the way. But you know, curiosity is a very, very powerful ingredient in life, and it's exactly the thing that leads to a passionate life, like having living our lives with full expression and passion, which is the very thing that leads to actually having a vision and a purpose in life as adults. So if somehow we lose sight or track of what we're actually curious about or what we'd like to learn, there's a level of disengagement there, and nature is just the thing that can help us reengage with our curiosity and our purpose.
Well, I feel so inspired just hearing all those benefits myself. And I try and think, you know, how has nature affected me? And I know that you know, nature provides a lot of solace to me, and it really gives me a feeling of being at home, you know, that sense of belonging I really feel. And then, which really is like a feeling of groundedness and calm in my body instead of feeling floating and anxious and unrooted. I feel, you know, more rooted as I go on. And I, you know, as you're speaking, I'm thinking, I do feel like that I am, you know, that I have a very interesting life that I've made interesting for myself, and that it feels like more and more I am able to express in my life kind of like my soul's purpose, or I'm not sure exactly how to say it, but I just feel more myself, and it feels really, really great. So when you're talking about the enriched life, I really feel like it has contributed that for me.
Nice. And you know, it's a relatively long and juicy list, you know, that I just shared. And I think each of all those things, you know, being curious, having a huge capacity to love people and to fall in love with the land, you know, and to you know, cultivate and recognize the visions that we have in our lives. You know, all these things are entirely natural human characteristics. You know, we all have gifts that the world needs from us right now. You know, we all have that. And you know, I think another way of describing it is really just being your natural self. You know, being your naturally fully expressed self. And you know, nature, just wild nature, urban nature, whatever the case may be, it has this really powerful ability of drawing this out of us. You know, especially when we're able to come home at the end of the day and share our story from nature. And especially when we have people in our lives that can sit and listen to those stories and ask those questions of our experiences outside. You know, the potential is there, and you know, community is certainly a big part of it, and which is part of the reason why I love this conversation, is just to bring it out into the open, you know, so we can actually discuss what our own personal experiences have been in the way of you know, feeling at home in our own bodies and feeling at home on the land wherever we live.
That's really cool. Scott, is that a bird in your background that I'm hearing?
Yeah, I'm outside. Yeah,
that's
nice
so interesting. As you're talking, I'm hearing this, like, this little bird squeaking.
Yeah, it's there's a lot that I could say about that. But the gist is that there are some ravens in the neighborhood that are spending time right now at the very tops of the trees.
Uh-huh.
And there's some robins that just flew off in the opposite direction. So there are ravens looking to the east, and the robins just flew west. And I don't quite have enough information to know with certainty, but it sure feels like it's the bird language of a Kupersaw coming in.
Okay.
This is just the right kind of signature that the birds will sort of display when there's a Kupersaw in the neighborhood. So I'm curious about that.
So listening to those bird calls gives you ideas about what else is happening in the environment.
Yeah, and that might be a conference call for another time.
talks about bird language. But, you know, you mentioned before about, you know, specific things that a person can do to mm-hmm. to connect more fully with nature. And I know that there's, I'd love to hear your thoughts about the sit spot, because that has been something uh-huh. really beneficial for me. I know I'll mm-hmm. just say for myself, it's a place where I go outside on a regular basis. And I have to be honest, I'm pretty busy myself, and I get distracted, and so it's not always super regular. But it's
sure.
enough that it has really been an enriching experience for me. Would you like to say something about sit spots or other routines that help?
Yeah, sure. So, when it comes to sort of living in this day and age and really, you know, being interested in connecting more fully and becoming more aware of the life in our area. Many of us will go for our walks or we'll hike in the trails nearby, or we'll spend some time in different parks and explore different parts of the state perhaps, I have wandering in my bones. I'm a big time wanderer. I love to explore and check out new places, and just follow my body around in a deep wander. And I've also learned that when it comes to, really getting to know one place really well and really getting to know the birds that are living in my neighborhood and that are beginning to nest right now, and really getting to feel in my body the subtleties that change in each day, in each season from my place. The trees are there all the time, but the colors of green in a dug fir change from one season to the next. And to really recognize and learn to appreciate and love those subtle changes in the actual lives, the gray fox and the skunk that lives in the neighborhood, I've learned that I have to stop moving around. It really helps to actually anchor my nature time into one place and to just commit to that one place and to wrap some routines around it. So, for example, for me, I have a couple sit spots in this area, one near my work and one near my home. And sometimes I'll spend hours at my sit spot. But my most common routine these days is really to, when I wake up in the morning, to get the tea going and to fix myself a hot drink, and then to step outside with my hot mug of tea and go to that place up on the hill near the garden that I like to sit and just settle in and have my tea from that sit spot. And while I'm there, I won't read a book or do any journaling. I'll just sit and hold my cup of tea, feel the chill of the morning air, and I'll listen. Sometimes I'll listen for the quietest sound to the south, which is downhill for me. I'll listen downhill to the south for the quietest sound. And that exercise for me is, I think, it's most fun oftentimes when it's pre-dawn, when there's still some stars out, and it's that quietest time of any day or night. It's that sort of 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning, and I'll just listen for who's making sound at that time of night when it's so quiet, and I'll listen for what bird makes the first song. It's one of the most exciting sort of tension breakers for me is being up at, you know, before dawn and listening to that first bird sing. And just moments later, it might sing once more, but then everybody else starts singing after that. And it's such a special moment. If you haven't spent time up in the early mornings, you know, I really recommend getting up early soon and just hearing the dawn chorus this spring season. So the sit spot is a core routine to cultivate connection to whatever place you choose. You know, whether it's the back step because it's just so convenient and gives you a little window into the backyard of nature, or you know, the trail that's just a couple minutes walk away. You know, it's got to be convenient. But whatever place we choose, I think it's got to recognize that there's plenty of nature to engage in wherever we are, because there's a massive bird migration going on right now that is combing through every city in America. And, you know, the robins and the mourning doves are nesting in San Francisco and in L.A. right now, just like they are in my own backyard in the woods here. So, you know, the sit spot is an opportunity really to anchor and to commit to one place for a time, you know, whether it's 5 minutes every day or an hour once a week, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, frequent, easy, quiet nature time is what it's about.
Well, that's neat. You know, it's so funny, Scott, because I bring my tea to my sit spot in the morning, and I've always wondered,
nice.
Is it really okay to have tea? Because I'm not being perfectly still, because I'm moving my hand up and down to drink my tea, so I'm not perfectly
right,
still.
Right.
I've always thought, well, yeah. Maybe I'm not doing this totally right. So it's kind of reassuring to hear that you do that too.
That's excellent. And that's one of, you know, two things that come up for me there is that, I used to be a little bit more, hardcore about it, I suppose. You know, just really, like, really super intentional and regimented. But, I don't know, I've got some grief around that. You know, I don't really want to have all these rules and should around these kinds of things. You know? So I just, you know, in recent years, I've really relaxed around it and just let it be however it needs to be. You know, and things like that. Am I doing it wrong? You know, like, I think that's exactly part of what I'm referring to when I say really finding home within ourselves, you know, is when we spend time outside in nature and we quiet down and really try to quiet the chatter in our minds, you know, those voices come up. They're entirely natural. and there's opportunity to release some of those old fears and some of that grief that's been, you know, stuck in there for a while. And you know, the big body of Mother Earth, you know, can hold that space for us, you know, and you know, a sit spot routine and deep listening for the quietest sound is a very effective way of getting in touch with those different parts of ourselves and learning to care for them.
And is there a certain amount of time that's kind of ideal, or does it make a difference? Or
it depends on the context, I suppose. You know, it's all relative to you know, who we're referring to. You know, I know for myself these days, if I'm going out and I'm really wanting to listen to the relaxed sort of natural lives of the birds. For example, if I go out, I know that just by going out and crossing that hill to sit, I'm probably going to push them away a little bit. I'm going to influence their behavior a little bit, and I need to be out there with enough time for them to trust me and to settle back into the, you know, the comings and goings of their lives. You know, so if I'm going out to really notice the natural movement and sound and behavior of birds, you know, I'll go out for at least, you know, 20 minutes or 30 minutes, ideally an hour, and maybe even, you know, jot a couple notes down while I'm out there to help me remember when I come home.
So you're saying, if you just have a few minutes, anything is good, but if you have at least 20 minutes, then you get a chance for the birds and animals to get used to your presence and behave more naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think it's important to say that, you know, the more we practice this kind of a routine of just, you know, sitting in one place and really getting to know this one place and letting this place get to know us, the easier it is to spend more time, you know, the more curious I become, and the more I actually want to go back out there and check that thing out, because I really want to know what happened with that little dig that I found near my sit spot, or that nesting bird. I wonder if those eggs have hatched it. I really want to go out there and check that out and watch for those watch for that particular nest, you know. But even just 2 full minutes of, on the way out the door, on the way to my car, pausing just outside the doorstep and just taking a moment to look up at the sky and to listen in all directions and to give it just a little bit of thanks, just to give it 2 minutes. Just to greet the day in a simple, mindful way has a profound influence on how we start the day or how we come home at the end of the day, and even that is certainly worthwhile. So there's lots of ways of doing it.
I have 2 questions kind of in my mind floating. One, I'll just say both of them, and you can choose what feels right to answer. Well, one, I'd love to hear of, an experience that you had that was illuminating for you at your sit spot. And two, there are some days where it just feels like nothing is happening at the sit spot, and it's like this is a huge waste of time kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just let that float out, and you can tackle either or whatever you'd like to.
Well, really what came to mind right when you said that for me was from my desk at home, which isn't far from my sit spot, but it's a really sweet story that I'd like to share. I was at home this morning at my desk just, preparing for my day, and I had a couple things to work on, and I noticed I've got a big window right in front of my desk here, and I noticed just out of the corner of my eye kind of the flitty flight of a bird, and I think I didn't notice it consciously the first time, I don't think, because there's lots of birds that fly here and there. But what caught my eye was that it came from high up on a tree and flew diagonally down to the ground and then flew from down on the ground back up to the height of the tree. And it did that again. And there's something about it doing that again that was a pattern that I recognized subconsciously, and my mind kind of shifted right back into conscious mode, and really wanted to look at that. What is that bird up to if it's flying back and forth more than once? There's a pattern there that I want to actually explore. My curiosity just lit up, and I stopped what I was doing and got up off of my chair and went out on the deck to have a closer look, because I couldn't quite see where it was landing. And it was this little mourning dove on the ground below these Doug firs that surround my house, and just right down near the shrubs. And, in a sense, it's just a mourning dove. Mourning doves are everywhere, especially in the cities and in suburban places. But I've learned to not pay too much attention to that voice of, it's just a mourning dove, sort of discounting it. Because the life of this particular mourning dove on this particular morning was such a sweet and precious moment, because it was actually on the ground. I watched it for a couple minutes, and it was kind of, chucking along, and it looked like it was searching for something. It was by itself on the ground, kind of bopping its head as they do, and it was looking at the ground and kind of pecking at the ground a bit. And once it had a beak full of dry grasses, it flew diagonally back up off of the ground and up into one of the tall branches of this tree. And I could see just where it flew into the branches, where it kind of would lose sight. And I realized that it was building a nest, and this mourning dove is building a nest just, 50 feet or so from my window here, in a Douglas fir. And, they do this every year, and it's such a common bird. And yes, of course they're nesting here. I kind of already knew that they probably would be, but to actually witness the life of this particular little bird that has a beating heart just like mine, to watch this bird actually settle into my neighborhood and build a nest to raise a family, it's just such a special moment, and it just really touched me. And I watched it for a few minutes fly back and forth and kind of memorize that little particular spot on the branch where it seems to be building its nest. And I really want to, take some binoculars and try to get it at a different angle to see if I can see the actual nest. And I was so touched to have an opportunity to witness, just the sort of the blessed special moment of this season of birds nesting. And now I want to actually, draw a base map of my area again. In this season, I haven't done that yet, in this particular season, and begin to actually map out where all the birds are nesting and actually keep track of them in the coming weeks and months, and keep track of their families as they raise them and they fledge. And it was just from this brief observation and this little hit of curiosity as I noticed this flash of light at the corner of my eye. And I'm so glad I got up off my chair and pushed the pause button on my work and to actually investigate my curiosity and have a closer look. It was so sweet. And
that's
for that's
really neat.
It was really a precious moment for me. And as for being bored at your spot, you're certainly not the only one that I've heard say that. And I've had those moments too. And I think all I want to say about that right now is that we live in such a stimulating time, just in terms of media and entertainment in particular, that some of us will do anything at all, to avoid being bored. we'll do whatever we can to stimulate ourselves so we're not bored. There are a couple of different reasons that I've grown to become familiar with in my own life about why that is for me personally. But I really encourage anybody who is spending time outside, who is starting to feel bored, to check that out. I mean, what does it feel like to be bored? And just recognize that there's nothing wrong with that. And in my experience, once I honor that and just recognize it and recognize that it's a quiet and, not so stimulating time, that my curiosity follows right away. And then suddenly there's something that piques my interest and I go check it out. So I wouldn't consider that a problem.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting you brought up, all the media. I've noticed that the media things are all named after nature, like Firefox and Snow Leopard and Tiger and all these different browsers and programs and things. We name our cars, we're all naming, so many things are named after nature as if
mm-hmm.
we miss these things and we want to bring them into our life. But, of course, we can always walk outside and bring it in that way.
Sure. And just to touch on this once more about community, there's something about doing this work alone that really slows it down. And I know for myself, much of my 20s were solo time, wonderful friends and family as well, but, a lot of time outside by myself in nature with really no one to share stories with when I came home or nobody to mentor me through that process. And I think, just finding people in our lives in these telephone conference calls or, neighbors that live nearby or, the old friend that we talk to on the phone from time to time, just really do whatever we can to bring this part of our lives, this love and this interest in nature, and the sacred questions that come out of these times, these deeply personal sacred questions about who that bird is or what I'm afraid of or whatever the case may be, really bring this side of ourselves to life in conversation with other people, I think is really, really key.
That's a really great tip. Thank you. Well, speaking of bringing it in conversation with others, I was wondering if this is a good time to open it up for questions or comments from people. Was there anything else you wanted to say before we did that, Scott?
No, let's just go there. But, yeah, I'd love to hear stories or questions or, any insights coming from who else is on the call.
So anyone who'd like to share. First of all, are there any questions that anyone has for Scott?
Great.
Well, if there's no questions, then I am wondering, what out of all these things that have been said, what resonated with you the most? Either share on that, or if there's another nature experience that you've had that you'd like to share, love to hear from you. So either something that we've talked about that resonated with you, or a nature experience, and who'd like to speak first?
Well, I always hate to be the first one, but I guess I will. This is Suzanne.
Thank you, Dan.
I just really appreciated your talk and was really helpful to kind of close my eyes and hear your experience with nature, and which I share, of course. And one thing I do notice that what I have trouble remembering the names of things, and I would oftentimes say, for instance, people who are birders, or, and they count the species that they can can see. I never remember the names of anything, but I still enjoy being in nature. And I guess I wanted your thoughts about that. I mean, I remember a robin or so forth, but how important is it to name something, a plant or a bird, or versus just observing it going by? I don't know if that makes sense. But.
No, it's a great question, because there's definitely, we're all familiar with just, various facets of our culture that are really, really good at naming things, and there's nothing, it's a wonderful practice. We are linguistic beings, and to name something really helps our brain kind of file it away and remember it. But I'd also like to say that it can become an obsession, and it can become a real distraction. And And when it comes to, I work a lot with kids outside, and oftentimes the kids will just make up a name of their own for something. Mm-hmm. And we actually really encourage that. We don't go around naming things so much for them as we do just, help them, role model having a closer look and checking things out and being wowed by what's actually happening, And oftentimes they have this natural impulse to wanna put some kind of a name to it, whether it's Charlie or... or the circle plant, and whatever the case may be, whether it's in miner's lettuce or the circle plant, it helps our brains file things away by naming it to some degree. But when it comes to really cultivating deep connection to nature, and just using bird language as an example, in the realm of studying bird language and practicing, listening for birds and the clues that they give us from our sit spots. John Young does, really, he's very specific about encouraging us to get to know the five most common birds in our area, the five most common ground birds and song birds in our area. And it's not about, finding the most, the most rare warbler to check it off of our list as a really committed birder, as much as it is really getting to know the common lives in our area. And listening deeply to, just the intimacies of their lives. And that's really where the connection is deepest, I find, as opposed to, being able to memorize all the names.
That's a great idea, just sort of identify the family of birds that are around you kind of in your circle, and maybe get to, I have plenty of books, maybe get to know their name, maybe not, maybe name them myself, which
sure.
I think is a good idea.
Yeah, and honestly, you named the Orange County Warbler, and I have those guys in my neighborhood right now too, and I love them, I love knowing their name, that helps me, but but really I pay much more attention to the robin, and I've grown to love the juncos in my area, and the sparrows, just the little common guys. And they teach me so much about where the house cat likes to travel. And they tell me when the fox is in the neighborhood, much more so than those exotic birds in the treetops. So it's not about the names and how long your list is. It's really more about quality time in nature, and really, really asking questions from that authentic curiosity that we all have.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Who else wants to share? We all have stories to share. It's funny, I find myself sometimes really, on calls like this also, sort of waiting for someone else to go and feeling like, maybe my story isn't quite as cool as it could be. But I would really love, I love the conversational nature of this call, honestly, and I just would love to hear from at least one other person just to get a hit on what's moving you right now. What part of this conversation is really lighting you up or you know, really gets you curious.
Well, it seems we have a quiet bunch here, Scott.
We do.
You're thinking it through, well, I suppose.
Yeah, that's okay. Now feel free to chime in later if you'd like, because we have another 10 minutes. Well, there's another piece that comes to mind, honestly, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I lived in San Francisco for 8 years, and while I lived in the city, I spent a lot of time out up in the mountains in the Sierras and surfing in the ocean too, and traveling around a bit. And my city time was really city. Like when I lived in the city and while I spent my days in the city, I was really living a pretty urban life, and I really appreciated Golden Gate Park. But I didn't really feel like I had a strong connection to the nature there. And since leaving the city, I've really grown to have a whole new appreciation for the fantastic and dramatic lives that are happening there. You know, I mentioned Cooper Fox earlier, and whether you know birds well or not, there are some birds that are very big, raptors, hawks and eagles and things, owls. There's some hawks that specialize in hunting for things on the ground, like mice and rabbits. And there's some hawks that specialize in hunting other birds, songbirds in particular. And there's one particular hawk called a Cooper's hawk that is so good at this. They are so specialized and effective at hunting and catching songbirds to bring back to feed their own families, that all the songbirds, and the ravens and crows included, but especially robins and especially the quail, have such a fine-tuned sense of hearing for the Cooper's hawk in particular. And when there's a Cooper's hawk in the neighborhood, all the birds are talking about them. All the birds are kind of freaking out and moving and getting as much distance as they possibly can, because they can't afford to be relaxed about that, because the Cooper's hawk is so great at hunting down these birds. And the Cooper's hawks live in the cities much more so. Peregrine falcons, too. There's so many falcons, so many Cooper's hawks in San Francisco relative to the wildlife that surrounds the city. There's a much higher concentration there. And, if you live in the city, I encourage you to just pay special attention to the pigeons downtown and the pigeons that fly underneath the Bay Bridge there, and try to backtrack the flight patterns of those pigeons and see what you find. You might be surprised. It's really remarkable how much thriving life there is to pay close attention to and to track in the urban corridors of our country. It's pretty special. So I just wanted to name that because I used to live in the city and feel a little bit sad about how far away nature seemed, and have since learned that is far from the truth. It's all right there. And it's just a matter of stopping for a moment and listening.
I would agree. It's been my dream to live in the country, and I'm really happy that I do, but I do return to the Bay Area twice a month to see my clients. And when I walk around the area around my office down in El Cerrito, I feel like I notice a little bit more, like what birds are singing, and they're like familiar birds, and I'm like, oh, my friends are here too, and so it is. Even though I travel back and forth, it's grounding for me to recognize the birds in each place that I go. And I did when I lived in Berkeley. I would sit outside my front door and watch, and was able to see a lot of things, and there's always the sky to notice, and the stars, mm-hmm. and the moon, and the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you can't see birds, there's always that.
Yeah, and it's always changing. And it's one of these things where my friend Kalani used to say, he's an elder from Hawaii, and he used to say that nature, it's always changing.
Yeah.
Always the same.
I know. I have one little question, if you don't mind. This is Suzanne again. What do you think about feeding, buying bird feed for birds? I mean, what do you think about that idea? And considering your perspective of even to the point of like hummingbirds or
mm-hmm.
you know finches. I mean, what do you think of that idea?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great question. I think it's very sweet to have an opportunity to feed and to spend time with birds in their neighborhoods, you know. And I think, you know, what I would suggest is both to really, you know, if you want to feed the birds, to really feed the birds with a really particular intention, I'd say. Just be as specific as you can based on the season that you're in. And, you know, I think to help articulate whatever your intention might be, it would really help to learn what those birds are eating in the wild in that season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so for example, the hummingbirds, they, of course, they're sucking on nectar in every chance they can get, but they also feed on insects, especially when they're nesting. But since they're so dependent on nectar, pay attention to what the hummingbirds are, you know, what nectar the hummingbirds are feeding on in this particular month. And there are some months of the year that are actually quite dry. And it's actually truly helpful to put something out for the hummingbirds because there's not a lot of other opportunity out there.
Hmm.
And then there are others where, you know, a neglected hummingbird feeder that's gotten kind of moldy, you know, might not be that helpful. You know, so I would just check in with, you know, what their natural diet is and what their true needs might be and what your intention is. And, you know, and it's I think it's perfectly great to have the intention of you know, being able to get closer to those birds by putting out a feeder and watching them. But I think the intention and the care of that feeder is really important too.
Great, thanks. Well, I noticed that we're just about out of time, but I wanted to leave you some time to talk about your tracking class that's coming up, and then I'd like to share a little bit about the Nurture in Nature retreat. So, Scott, tell us about your tracking class.
Cool. Yeah. So I teach tracking through a few different partners, one of which is the Regenerative Design Institute out in Belize, California, and it's a permaculture institute primarily. They've got a really incredible farm site, and they have classes that come through every week in one way or another. And one extension of their permaculture institute is all about nature connection and cultivating a really great ability to observe deeply the landscape before you start to change it as a permaculture designer. So my friend John Burchard and I teach, every spring and fall, we teach a series of classes called the Tracking and Nature Connection Series. And there are four all-day classes, full Saturdays, over 2 months typically. So our first class is actually an introduction to that series this coming Saturday, and we'll probably be out at Abbott's Lagoon on the Point Reyes Peninsula, but the site changes for every class, and it's a really, really great, immersive, holistic introduction to tracking wildlife. You know, both wildlife on the ground as well as the bird life, and it's a really, really wonderful way of cultivating a strong sense of belonging and awareness of you know the nature of our place as well. So that's the Tracking and Nature Connection series beginning this Saturday. There's also a series of cat tracking classes through the Felidae Fund, which is a wildlife conservation fund. So on one Saturday a month, we teach something we call Catscapes. And Catscapes is a three-hour class, one Saturday a month, specifically tracking bobcats and mountain lions. You can just drop in on any one of those classes and go to catscapes.com to learn more about that. And then just briefly, lastly, there's something called the Eight Shields Institute. And this is something that John Young and Mark Morey started several years ago. And John Young, again, is my Nature Connection mentor and tracking mentor and friend. And the Eight Shields Institute has something called Village Talks. And it's a series of conference calls similar to these every Monday and every Thursday. The Monday calls are all about nature connection. And you can sign up for a full season, a block. We just started block 7 last week. And if you're interested in joining in Nature Connection conversation with some really powerful mentorship and stories, you know, just check out hshields.org, or you can go to naturementoring.ning.com and look up the Village Talk section of those services. But, yeah, I love this work, and it's really, really incredible to spend time outside with each other and to ask questions to really help us drop into deep connection. So, yeah, that's much of what I'm up to these days. And thanks again, Anastasia, for the invite. This has been really great.
Well, you're so very welcome. It was really a pleasure, Scott. Thank you so much. And, you know, if you want me, I'll send out an email to everybody on the registration list with a copy of this recording. And if you want me to include any links, you know, email me them and I'll include them so that people can have them. I'll just briefly share that I'm co-leading the Nurture in Nature Retreat, June 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, up here in Forest Ranch, which is the foothills east of Chico. And I'm co-leading with Suzanne Lorenz. Mm-hmm. And we are blending together self-care practices, especially creativity, and the kind of nature awareness we talked about tonight. So we'll be doing some of these exercises, sit spots, and other things that we didn't have time to talk about tonight, but really cultivating for each person to feel a lot more comfortable connecting on that deep level with nature. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me or call me. And I guess that's it. So I so appreciated everyone being on the call, everyone listening to the recording. And Scott, thank you so much. It was just really great having this conversation with you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Yeah, thanks again. And I'm really excited to hear about your retreat. It's really great work. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, well, good night, everyone.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.